For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening. Welcome. I want to speak this evening about one of the Bodhisattva practices. This is from the four methods of guidance. There's a writing about it by Dogen, the 13th century founder of Soto Zen, the branch of Zen Buddhism that we follow here. And we've talked about some of these before. When Alan Sinocchi was here last year, he talked about these four. But I want to talk particularly about the fourth, but I'll mention the other three first. So the first is the practice of giving or generosity. So these are practices that are used by bodhisattvas, enlightening beings who are dedicated to relieving the suffering and helping the awakening of all beings. And generosity or giving is the first. And there's a lot to say about each of these four. One of the things that's kind of provocative that Dogen says about giving is that giving means to offer flowers from distant mountains to a Buddha, to give away treasures from one's past lives to living beings. Giving is not just a matter of giving gifts, but that generosity is something that happens in a mutual way. We talk about giver, receiver, and gift in the meal chant. So generosity is the circle of our sharing. Anyway, there's a lot to say about that, and we'll talk about that practice. It's a real practice and a challenging practice. The second one is kind speech. So to speak kindly to others and of others actually helps beings awaken. Even to speak kindly if someone is not present. Sometimes we have to speak truth to powers, so to speak, or sometimes we have to speak strongly, but how do we do it in a respectful way? So kind speech is respectful speech, and it is actually helpful and helps all beings awaken. The third one is beneficial action. So this is at the center, of course, of the Bodhisattva way, the way of enlightening all beings, the way of awakening ourselves and others, to act to benefit all beings. So we'll do the four Bodhisattva vows at the end of this talk, and we talk about freeing all beings, even though they're numberless. But even in a very more limited practical way, to be helpful, to act beneficially. Again, each of these four is a very complex practice. But the one I want to talk about most tonight is, in Tom Cleary's translation, he calls it cooperation. Kaz Ta-Nehisi translates it as identity action. And so I want to read some of what Dogen says about it and talk about this as a kind of intentional practice in the Bodhisattva way that we can do in our life together in Sangha, but also in our life in all the other realms of community that we all have as when we step out of the storefront of Ancient Dragon. How do we practice this cooperation or identity action? This section of Dogen's writing about this says, cooperation means non-opposition. Identity action, Kaz Ta-Nehisi says, means non-difference. The same Japanese words, but different ways of translating it, but you can see how they both translations are relevant. Non-opposition, non-difference. It is not opposing oneself and not opposing others. It is like a human Buddha being the same as a human being. Because of assimilation to the human world, we know a Buddha must assimilate to other worlds. So as human beings, we follow the Bodhisattva way in the way that works for human beings. We don't know, as I've talked about before, how dolphins practice the Buddha way. They have many advantages that we don't have. They get to swim freely in the water. Hopefully they are avoiding the Gulf now, but anyway, they don't have the burden of opposable thumbs. They don't have to build big buildings and write books. They can just use their brains, which are much larger than us. Anyway, that's not our business, though, as bodhisattvas. Dolphin bodhisattvas can take care of their way. Because of assimilation to the human world, we know a Buddha must assimilate to other worlds. It's like a human Buddha being the same as a human being. When one knows cooperation, self and others are one suchness. So this idea of cooperation is a bridge between wisdom and compassion. I talked about that. A couple of you were here yesterday when I talked about the balancing of wisdom and compassion, the two sides of practice. And I've been talking about that for the last 2 or 3 weeks, more from the side of wisdom, but also including compassion, seeing into the sameness. So we chanted the harmony of sameness and difference tonight. The sameness of all beings has to do with non-difference, non-opposition. But then also, how do we practice this recognizing the difference? So compassion is about not just recognizing, but actually appreciating each particular way of being Buddha, appreciating the difference. So this is an intentional practice, identity action, cooperation. How do we find our way to this? What is this practice about? I think this is a very important practice for us in the human world now. How do we find our way to share with each other, seeing non-difference, non-opposition, and each of us finding our own way to do that? So again, Dogen says, when one knows cooperation or identity action, self and others are one suchness. This is, in some ways, the fundamental problem of our existence. And I would say, not just for human beings, but anyway, as human beings, the way our consciousness works is subject and object. We see a world of other out there. And our habits from many lifetimes, we say, our patterns of thinking are to react based on seeing other, to want to grab what we think we need or want, to push away that which we think, you know, is in our way. We separate ourselves from the world. The basic teaching of emptiness is that we are all deeply interconnected with each other. So this practice of identity action and cooperation is really how to implement compassion from insight, from prajna, from wisdom. When one knows cooperation, self and others are just one suchness. And Dogen goes on to talk about this kind of sweetly. He says, their music, song, and wine accompanies people, accompanies celestial beings, accompanies spirits. People keep company with music, song, and wine. And music, song, and wine keep company with music, song, and wine. So for some people, you know, maybe it's some other kind of drink besides wine. But anyway, we share our activities together as human beings. This is part of our cooperation. People keep company with people, he says. Celestial beings keep company with celestial beings. Spirits keep company with spirits. There is such a logic. It is the learning of cooperation. How do we see our connection to each other? And how do we find our ways to cooperate, to share our life together? So this is the basic challenge of the Bodhisattva life. how do we enjoy each other? How do we cooperate? Even when we do see the differences, how do we see this underlying non-opposition or non-difference? This is a practice that we each can take on in our own lives with friends, families, coworkers, in our relationships, in our families. And it's also the practice that the world needs now. How do we cooperate? Not for the sake of some personal profit or some company's quarterly profit margin, but to see that actually we are all in it together. What happens to the planet happens to all of us. How do we find this identity action or cooperation? So, continuing a little with Dogen's take on this. He says, for example, a task of cooperation is a manner, a standard, an attitude, or Kaz translates some of that as a posture. So we learn uprightness in this zazen practice. We sit, we face the wall, we face ourselves. There's a kind of dignity that we learn, this inner dignity, this inner attitude of being present. And, some periods of zazen we may enjoy more than others, or we may think, oh, that was really nice, kind of relaxed zazen. Or we may be all tangled up in some problem or thinking, and or we may be sleepy or whatever. We can have these different ideas or evaluations or judgments about our zazen or about any experience. But what Dogen suggests is that cooperating, the spirit of cooperation, is a kind of attitude or posture, a kind of way of finding our inner dignity. And then he says, after regarding others as self, there must be a principle of assimilating oneself to others. Self and others are endless with time. So, to say non-difference doesn't mean that we ignore or suppress the ways in which we do think there are differences. I can tell the difference between Douglas and Adam, but also there's something that's the same. There's a way in which we can cooperate together and perform a ceremony, for example, as we just did together, each in our own way. How do we see and recognize and appreciate each other and see also that we can assimilate oneself to others? So when Reb was here, he drew this wonderful illustration. He drew a big circle on the board at the cenacle in one of his talks, and said, this is the universe, this is everything, and we all see this, and we all see the wholeness of this. But then we also, and he drew a little kind of, pimple or something on top of it, and said, but we all think that there's a self, that's us, that's on top of this. So, this assimilating oneself to others, how do we see that we actually are part of this field of cooperation of the whole planet, of the whole universe, of our whole sangha, and the sangha of sanghas, the collection of sanghas that we each belong to? There must be a principle of assimilating oneself to others after regarding others as self. You see, others are connected to us. Everything is connected. So, then Dogen quotes an ancient philosopher, and it's something from an ancient Chinese text. I'm not really familiar with the Guanzi, supposedly from the 7th century BC. But anyway, it says, the ocean does not refuse water. Therefore, it has been able to become so immense. Mountains don't refuse earth. That is why they can be so high. An enlightened ruler doesn't refuse people. Therefore, his community can become populous. Know that oceans not refusing water is cooperation. Know further that the virtue of the water not refusing the ocean, too, is complete. For this reason, water gathers and becomes an ocean. Earth accumulates and becomes a mountain. We implicitly know that because the ocean doesn't refuse the ocean, it forms an ocean and creates its immensity. Because the mountain doesn't refuse the mountain, it forms a mountain. And piling up the earth, it makes its height. And then he has this thing about rulers and lords. So I wanted to say a little bit about this. He says, because an enlightened ruler doesn't reject people, he forms a community of them. The sovereign does not reject people. Though the sovereign does not reject people, that does mean that there are no rewards and punishments. But though there are rewards and punishments, there is no rejecting people. Basically, the bodhisattva idea is that we don't abandon anyone. That as difficult as some people may be for us, there's some way to cooperate. There's some way to see how we are connected with everyone. Everyone is welcome in the field of bodhisattva identity action. He goes on to say, following up, he says, because an enlightened ruler is wise, he doesn't reject people. People always form a nation. And I want to talk about this in terms of forming a community. Though they have a mind to seek an enlightened ruler, because there are few who thoroughly know the reason an enlightened ruler is an enlightened ruler, they only rejoice in not being rejected by an enlightened ruler, but don't know how to not reject an enlightened ruler themselves. Therefore, because there is the logic of cooperation or identity action in both enlightened rulers and in ignorant people, cooperation is the practical undertaking of the bodhisattva. One should face everyone with a gentle expression. So, you know, this part of what Dogen says about this cooperation or identity action is kind of interesting to me. I'm sitting up here with a brown robe and a staff, and I have Dharma transmission, and I'm the Dharma teacher here. But actually, you know, there's a way in which what he's talking about here, as an example, along with oceans and mountains, of how nations form or communities form, you know, is based on a kind of Confucian ideal. And this idea of an enlightened person, an enlightened master, is... you know, in some ways goes back to the Confucian virtue of the ancient great kings who were, you know, these legendary mythical Chinese kings who, you know, were looked back upon as these paragons of virtue. But I think we need to update this idea of identity action and cooperation. Early on in American Zen, and occasionally still, you know, there was this problem of thinking that of the Dharma teacher as this great enlightened master. And that's really not what Zen practice is about. If you want some perfected master to tell you, you know, how to be and how to take care of your problems, and you know, if you think the goal of the practice is to become some great perfected master, that's not the spirit of identity action or cooperation, and that's not the real bodhisattva way. Our practice is to find out how to be human beings. So this ideal, you know, of the perfect Zen master, which was very appealing in the beginning of American Zen, and, you know, people got into trouble because they actually thought they were great perfected masters and then, you know, did ugly things. The real spirit of cooperation is, again, that there is not self and other. So my job is to sit up here and do these Dharma talks. Some of you also give talks sometimes, and we have guest speakers, and, you know. But the point of Zen practice is not to become perfect. maybe I'll say it again. The point of Zen practice is not to become some perfect being. The point of Zen practice is not to get high. The point of Zen practice is not to reach some exalted state of mind. We sit as we are. The point is to be the Buddha you are, to be the Buddha as a human being, who you are. So there's another way of thinking about Buddhist teachers. Goes back to early Buddhism, the Kalyanamitra, the spiritual friend. So I'm sorry if you want me to be some perfect master. That's not who I am. And yet I have some experience of 35 years of sitting every day and studying this Dharma and struggling with how to share it. And it's something we do together. Identity action means that all of us are in it together. We are all spiritual friends. And I can't tell you how you can be Buddha. And even if I could, I wouldn't. It's not, you know, there's some styles of Zen of, you know, it's very intense, pushing the student to break through and, you know, have some dramatic awakening experience. Those things happen and it's fine and when that happens. But really, how do we find our way to cooperate, to share together this bodhisattva intention, this direction towards beneficial action and generosity and kind speech? How do we see each other in Sangha, in the world, in the struggles with all the problems in the world? You know, the world needs this. The world needs kind speech. The world needs true generosity. The world needs lots of beneficial action. How are we going to clean up all of the pollution of this world? This is not something that some, you know, great ruler in the White House or whatever is going to accomplish. The bodhisattva way is actually about how do we see each other? How do we see through our illusions about self and others? And then, as Dogen puts it, after regarding others as self, after seeing how others are related to oneself and not separate from oneself, there must be a principle of assimilating oneself to others. How do we share? How do we share that which we know, that which we have to give? How do we share our gifts and generosity? So today also happens to be the birthday of my favorite American Dharma poet, Bob Dylan. I thought about doing another Dharma talk about one of his songs, but I'm just going to throw in a verse or two that's relating to this sense of cooperation or identity action. So in Dear Landlord, he says, "Each of us has her own special gift, and you know this was meant to be true. And if you don't underestimate me, I won't underestimate you." I think this is the spirit of this identity action. Each of us has their own special gift, and in the harmony of difference and sameness, our great ancestor Chouteau, that we just chanted, said, "Each of the myriad things has its merit expressed according to function and place." So each of us has our own way to be Buddha. You know, I can't push you into becoming the Buddha you are. I don't want to do that. Our main practice is patience and just watching and seeing each other. And the training of bodhisattvas depends on, you know, each of us in our own way showing up and saying, okay, how do we find our way to cooperate? And, you know, as a spiritual friend, I or Sangha with each other can help in the opening up of this spirit of cooperation. That's what we're here for. There's another, this is a little more complicated, but there's another still online. This is at the end of Talk on World War III Blues, an early song where he's talking about seeing the end of the world, and you know, maybe you could update it towards Talk in British Petroleum Blues or something. This is the way in which the world is being damaged now. But in that context, he said, he talks about his own dream of being the last person alive or something. And at the end of the song, he says, "Now time passed, and now it seems everybody's having them dreams. Everybody sees themselves walking around with no one else. Half of the people can be part right all the time. Some of the people can be all right part of the time, but all the people can't be all right all the time. I think Abraham Lincoln said that. I'll let you be in my dreams if I can be in yours. I said that." So, how do we let each other be in our dreams? How do we let each other be part of this field of cooperation, of identity action, of the Bodhisattva way? This is a great challenge, and yet, in some ways, it's just a matter of relaxing into who we are. So Shitto's other chant that we sometimes do, the Song on the Grass Hut, talks about letting go of hundreds of years and relax completely. How do we relax into this, assimilating ourselves to others, or assimilating others to ourselves, working together, sharing each in our own way the gifts that come forth from our own cushion? I'll let you be in my dreams if I can be in yours. Each of us has our own special gift, our own special way of being generous, our own special way of helping ourselves and each other. So the point is that we're not separate. It's not so, you know, the idea of compassion, as I was saying yesterday, the idea of compassion maybe in Western society is charity. You know, I'm going to give something to you, you know, as if, you know, I have all these goodies. Actually, we all have this thing to share. So I learn about how to be Buddha from seeing each of you, as I see Buddha kind of emerging in some way from your cushions. So maybe that's enough to say happy Bob Dylan's birthday. Does anyone have comments, responses to share? Yes, Brooks.
It might be just kind of self-evident, and it might be a pun to say that, but identity action is the spirit of cooperation. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little more on that term, identity action itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Identity action means that, you know, when we share something, it's not in the spirit of I'm here and you're there. It's something we do together. It's not about you asking me a question. It's about something coming forth together. In one of his writings, Dogen says that Buddhists sometimes sit and give Dharma talks, and Buddhists sometimes sit and listen to Dharma talks. It's not that, you know, the speaking the talk is more important than the listening. This is something Buddhists do, listen to Dharma talks. So this identity action has to do with honoring the identity, honoring the non-separation that each of us with our own special gifts offers to this process of the Bodhisattva way. Thank you. Yes, I'll get this on.
I recently added mine to Mr. Dylan.
Okay.
That is, even though you underestimated me, I will never underestimate you.
Yeah, we sometimes fall into underestimation. So we need to be reminded. Thank you. Other comments or responses? Feel free.
Well, I hadn't thought about it like this before, but I just spent the weekend taking care of a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and we spent about the first 10 hours struggling until I figured out, and I would say it was cooperation. I wasn't taking care of them. We were all three taking care of each other while their parents were gone, because we were all sort of in this pickle together. Because it was all different, and Mommy and Daddy were gone, and I was there, and we were all sort of confused. But once we sort of got on each other's wavelength and cooperated and did it and just realized we were doing this together, we were a lot better off. So this is just different language for that. That's very helpful.
Yeah, cooperation works. Can work. Yes, Adam.
There's a great, they replayed an interview with Bob Dylan from 1963 on WFMT the other night. He was in Chicago in 1963, and this guy who used to have a radio show. Anyway, it was made for a fascinating listening now, and I was thinking, where are the Bob Dylans now? You know, that's kind of, because there's such a, so much quality to not only him as a musician, but his person and what he was struggling with and thinking about, and
well, he's still around.
I know he is.
I like his new stuff. I mean, people think of that he, you know, it's only from the 60s, but his you know, last several albums are very much worth listening to. But yeah, it's a question. Where is, you know, having, you know, lived through and thoroughly enjoyed the 60s and even remembering a lot of it, you know, there are different times when there's different energies. And I think, you know, things are in such a terrible state in some ways in the world that, you know, our goodwill and our caring and maybe our protests and demonstrations, I don't know, our poetry, our, you know, open hearts are needed now. So I think there are Bob Dylans around, maybe because of, you know, the internet and what are those websites where you can download music for free? There's not, you know, we don't know all the good songwriters who are out there now, but I think they're out there. They don't get as much, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, I think there's stuff out there.
You know, Matt Groening and Seth McFarlane are the Bob Dylan stuff today.
Well, you need to send me some links, because I don't know them and I want to.
They're like writers for The Simpsons and for Family Guy.
Yeah, The Simpsons is, yes, okay. I've seen The Family Guy once or twice, but yeah.
But I think they speak to, you know, this sense of longing and lack and delusion, as well as playful possibility.
Yeah. Playful possibility. That's a good way of talking about cooperation, identity action. When we're in it, when we realize that actually we're in it together. It's not, you know, obviously President Obama isn't going to fix anything, you know, with all due respect. There's, you know, this problem that we all have, and, you know, how do we all find playful possibility together?
Yeah, I struggle a lot with the one you're talking about, the two children who
just in my family, three of us, three children, work together, and it's really a power struggle. You know, this is a big power struggle, or not wanting to be, you know, so wanting to be in control, or wanting to put it on to, you know, other somebody else, not wanting to have to deal with it, and that's always that. You know, it's not. So I like that, the cooperation. I like that. I've forgotten it. My mom used to use that a lot. We need to cooperate. And, you know, that's such an important thing. I've forgotten about that. Like, just that word. You know?
And children learning to share, you know.
Because it's not just about playing nicely either. Because, you know, it's not always going to be that way.
Right.
You know?
Sometimes we have to say to some people, hey, stop stealing all the resources and share with the rest of the species, please. You know, and we can say it, you know, kindly, but we can say it strongly. It's not that they're evil, it's just, you know, what's happened to the way the world's organized that this is possible. It's very strange. Anyway. And, you know, in terms of how we all work together in so many ways, you know, just sharing, cooperation. Yeah. Other responses?
Well, I was thinking of cooperation in terms of yesterday, during our one day sitting, one of our neighbors had inadvertently parked a car that was blocked then by all the other cars. Actually, only two other cars. Cars that belonged to Tiger and myself. And so I'm cooking the meal and I'm like, focused on, I want these muffins to be, these biscuits to be warm for the Sangha.
They were good.
So, you know, I was like, you know, it's hard to keep biscuits warm while there's all this stuff on. So, you know, in the middle of that, there was a knock on the door. And this young hooded woman is like, can you move your car? And I said, I cannot do that right now. However, in 20 minutes, there will be a break. Come back and but it created this sort of like, how do you harmonize, you know, with this outer world? You know, we have this little insulation of my kitchen and the Zendo and all this happening, and you know, somehow we ate and the cars got moved. You know, my initial reaction was like, go away, I don't want you here. You know, I don't want to deal with your car.
Yeah, and they parked in our space.
And so, you know, it was sort of. And I noticed that car in the morning. I was like, oh, I wonder whose car that is. I wonder if that's a nice car. And so we got his car. One of our group got in the car, you know. Not like, oh, it was somebody else who, you know, maybe we should have checked it out before I parked behind it. You know, so I just thought it was like a fun thing to play with. Like, remind the others this whole world we're part of, even if we're, you know, concentrating on our samadhi or whatever.
Yes, it worked out.
And she didn't get into her car and try and move the other cars.
Yeah, that's good.
Because that thought crossed my head for a moment. I thought, oh, she was really upset. And that's the cooperation.
Yeah. I was cooking and Don came out and I said, Don, could you arrange this car movement while I keep the safe biscuits warm?
And that's what was in the movement. It was just like a little orchestration. Mm-hmm. I love that.